What thought immediately comes to mind when one hears the theme of our lesson for this week, the most convincing proof? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author, and we continue our series on oneness in Christ. And our topic, as I've mentioned, is the most convincing proof. My conversation partners are Jody Washburn and Dave Thomas, both teachers in the Walla Walla University School of Theology. My thanks to both of you. And now let's go to that question. What comes to mind?
The most convincing proof for what?
I presume.
That my wife's apple pie is good?
Well, the apple pie is proof there.
Well, that's right. That's what I'm saying. So this is your proof, convincing proof for what?
Oneness in Christ.
Oh, oneness in Christ.
I think that's what it's in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that
now,
makes sense.
What is the most convincing proof?
This just brings to mind how no matter who you are, where you are, you know every human recognizes the incongruity of a parent who says, do what I say and not what I do. We all know instinctively that something lived out is far more convincing than simple words spoken.
Yeah. So the most convincing proof would be a community that is unified.
Mm-hmm.
It's living in a unified manner. That'd be the most convincing proof that this can happen.
Well, I had some fun with this one because the thought that came immediately to me turns out to be a quotation from Ellen White. The strongest argument in favor of the gospel is a loving and lovable Christian.
See?
Ministry of Healing, 1905. Now, I checked the published writings of Ellen White. The first recorded use of the phrase loving and lovable with reference to the believer's behavior is this one. God would have us more kind, more loving and lovable, less critical and suspicious. Oh, that we all might have the Spirit of Christ and know how to deal with our brethren and our neighbors. So the first time Ellen White ever used that phrase, loving and lovable, was 1891.
Hmm.
Not before then, see. Why did it take so long? Come to that sharp focus. Now, I have the question down here, and we want to take a look at, is what does the New Testament teach as the most convincing proof? What would you say the New Testament? Jesus, apostles? What would the New Testament say?
Well, you must have some suggestions, Alden. That's a pretty wide open question.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. You think of Jesus' two great commands. Okay.
To love God supremely and to love your neighbor as yourself.
Okay. And he calls them the first and the second commands. But interestingly enough, when Jesus becomes even more succinct, he focuses on the second command. In everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. For this is the law and the prophets. And Galatians does the same thing. So it comes back to human relations. See? And if you try to make the essence of the community cerebral things, doctrines, teachings, it'll divide the community anytime, as important as those are. But one thing you can do is saying, how did you treat other people?
Well, and those are the things that, I mean, I would say if we were asked what story or picture comes to your mind when you think of transformative oneness in Christ,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think of the first time a friend sacrificed, like truly sacrificed for me, and I thought, whoa, that's a picture of what this looks like. You think of stories from Rwanda. You know, reconciliation, mm-hmm. when you're looking in the eyes of someone who might have done away with your entire family. And that leaves an indelible print on our minds. We think that could not have happened by anything other than the Spirit of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like John 13:35. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you want to ask the question, so what do we mean by love? And it's not always a soft, mushy emotion. In fact, sometimes it's a very principled
thing. And it's not a lack of accountability.
No,
I think
it's not.
We often mistake love for permissiveness.
If I love you, I'll let you do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
No. Well, Ellen White used a phrase, I think, very intriguing, a cruel kindness.
Mm. A cruel kindness.
Cruel kindness, I think, is certainly gets that same point. And Paul can be very pointed. Should I come to you with stick or with love in the spirit of gentleness? You know, it's so. But to treat other people the way we would want to be treated if we were in their place, I think that's a pretty good touchstone. But there are two in 1 John. Little children, let us love. This is 1 John 3:18. Little children, let us love not in word or speech, mm-hmm. but in truth and action. And then 1 John 3:23, and this is the commandment that we should believe in the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another, just as he commanded us.
That got me thinking about the parable of the two brothers, the one who said he would not go to work and he did go to work, and the other one who said he would go to work and wouldn't and mm-hmm. didn't. And who is the more noble?
The one whose action.
Yeah, actually did something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have three stories that I want to tell here because it raises, you know, the most convincing proof. We've talked about what is most convincing to us, but I have three examples that can highlight the issue. What if someone else has quite a different experience and a more rigorous view of God as a starting point? What would be convincing for them?
So let's hear the stories all.
All right. First one from Scotland, Sister Ferrier. A new convert to Adventism from the very rigorous We Free Church, as they called it. She told me that when she first became an Adventist, she could not appreciate the Desire of Ages at first because it was too gentle. Great Controversy was her favorite. It took several years before she could appreciate Desire of Ages. Every year, this dear sister would stand in front of the Edinburgh Church asking the saints to pray for her because she was taking her holiday to Albania and would be smuggling illegal Bibles into the country. It was clear to all that she was deeply troubled, hyperventilating, as she fervently made her request to the church members, and she was troubled when they tried to talk her out of it. All I asked of them was that they pray for me. When I questioned her, she said that from her we-free upbringing, she had learned that whatever she found most difficult, that would be what God was requiring her to do. Now, what would be the most convincing argument for someone like that? That's problematic. So that's
a
Scottish.
A hard assignment.
Hard assignment. Now, from the United States. Donna Coffeen was hired as a teacher at a special school for young people in the Walla Walla Valley who had been convicted of a felony. They were in prison. The only contact with people they had was when they came to the special school. One day, a young woman asked her, Mrs. Coffeen, how often does your husband beat you? He doesn't beat me, responded Mrs. C. He loves me. After a pause, the young woman replied, I feel sorry for you, Mrs. C. In my life, my parents beat me to show that they cared for me. My boyfriend beat me to show that he cared about me. I feel sorry for you, Mrs. C., that your husband doesn't love you. Now a story from Africa. Former colleague in the School of Theology, John Bunt, told of a conversation he had with a black African. While he was at seminary in the U.S., the African became convinced that he should go back to Africa and convince his fellow Adventist men that they shouldn't beat their wives. He won them over, and they stopped beating their wives. But then the wives began complaining that their husbands didn't love them anymore because they had stopped beating them. In short, all the violence in the Bible may represent first steps in moving towards a belief in a God who didn't kill anyone, didn't even strike anyone. But I'd like for us to take, we have a few minutes left here, I'd like for, having gone through those two tension points, those of us who have a softer approach to God, but what about those who have a really rigorous starting point? They would not be convinced by the gentle Jesus. Just as God came to Mount Sinai and shook the world, and if you look at those Israelites, were really impressed.
But in an unhappy way, because they told Moses, look, please, tell God don't come near anymore. You go up and meet him and come back and talk to us.
It's very true.
And we'll now, you know, these stories of beating Alden, it seems to me that if I was being beaten as a sign of love, it would be very easy for me to adjust away from that to no beating also being a sign of love.
I think one could.
Because beatings are not pleasant.
Now, the girl, for instance, she'd been convicted of felony. Obviously, when you have violence like that, there's something.
You don't know a different way.
Yeah, you don't know a different way. But, you know, and when she saw, she even included the gang. The gang beats you to show that you belong. and it's really quite amazing. But I think that when we look at the Bible, you have to take that which comes to the top, and this is the revelation of God in Jesus Christ, which is the clearest revelation. But when you put it that way, it also means that there are other revelations in the Bible that are not as clear. See? Well, why does God give revelations that are not as clear? Because they would not be able to reach people where they are. See? I remember Dr. Kubo told a story of a pastor in South Bend, Indiana, invited Dr. Kubo to come down because he was giving Bible studies and wanted Dr. Kubo. He had some issues with his brother that he was trying to deal with. And Dr. Kubo went in and made his presentation, and the man nodded his head, and the way people nod their heads when they don't quite understand. And the pastor sensed the difficulty, and he stepped in and gave an explanation that Dr. Kubo said made no sense to him. But the man said, oh, I see, and everybody lives happily ever after. So I think that's one of the reasons why Ellen White said God has not put himself on trial in words, logic, and rhetoric. Because if you're going to deal with somebody with crooked logic, you've got to reach them with crooked logic. See, and so I think the wild zoo that we have in the Bible is there for a purpose. And if we'll be inclusive, you know, kind of plot them on the map, okay, this is what God did to this one, and this is what God did to this one, then it would begin to make more sense. And I like to make sure that we don't ever throw anything away from the Bible, because if it may come to the place where that which I thought I didn't need is something that is really proves to be very helpful. So, in ways, I mentioned already Paul's comment, the end of 1 Corinthians 4, shall I come to you with stick or with love and the spirit of
but
gentleness?
That's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because those are the options.
Yep.
Shall I land on you or shall I be gentle? And I guess your behavior is to a large extent what determines it.
And I was intrigued by one of our majors, Greg McKelvey. You may remember Greg. Because I found in my classes that when I give an option, if a student's not turning paper in on time, I'll come to him quietly, not in front of the whole class, but quietly. Do you want me to come to you with stick or with love, the spirit of gentleness? By my estimate, about 70% of the students will say, no, 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 Thompson, no stick. I'll get the stuff in. But about 30% says, bring on the stick, Thompson.
Yeah.
I need the stick.
Yeah.
And Greg made the comment. He says probably half of those who say they don't want the stick really need it anyway. So this idea of God reaching people, treating people the way you'd want to be treated if you were in their way, if you were in their place, that means listening and find out where they were. Incredibly difficult to stand on your head and to do that in a meaningful way. Well, our time is up. Next week, our topic is going to be unity and broken relationships. Dave and Jody will be back again. My thanks to Abby Wissink, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.